Nodirex's Gen Con 2017 seminar coverage, Designing Your First Starfinder Character, presented by Paizo. Special thanks to Eric Brendan Ives and Andrew Mullins for their help recording these seminars.
Good fun time.
Hello.
Crazy people that are up this early. We have an excuse. We have to be here. What's your excuse?
We appreciate your dedication.
What do you mean, Senator? We're here because we want to be here.
I want to be here. I just don't want to be conscious while I'm here.
The joys of Gen Con.
Everyone, the passed out corpse of James.
Yeah, exactly.
We're hoping you have extra Starfighter for
Oh, wouldn't that
be? We actually don't. If you notice, there are no books up here and under the table because you guys bought all of our books. So thank you so much for your support.
Yeah.
And, now we're going to tell you how to make a character with that book. Yeah.
Thank you for your support, and please protect us from all the people with Friday and Saturday badges who are like, where is Starfinder?
Yeah. Go to Paizo.com and buy the PDF.
Yeah. Yep. So we have several different directions that this could go. We could workshop building a character. We could be going over, how did we come up with the way to do character building and the process as a whole? If you want to get into the background of things, or we can get into really granular things. We can just do question and answer if you like. Do we want
to figure out introductions?
Why you're here? So yeah,
we should probably
just do that, though, to give you time to think on that one. Yeah. Hi, I'm John Compton. I'm the Organized Play lead developer, so do creative stuff for all the stuff in the Sagamore Ballroom right over there in Starfinder Society, Pathfinder Society.
I'm Amanda Hammond-Koontz. I'm the development coordinator at Paizo and a member of the Starfinder design team.
I'm James L. Sutter. I'm the creative director on Starfinder.
So what are you guys interested in hearing about? Some of those things John's mentioned?
Maybe we should divide them up and do sort of show of hands. How many people want to actually go through building a character together?
Okay.
All right. That's people should have.
How many are here because you'd like to know more about the history and background of how we designed character design?
Okay, cool. And how many people are just here to sit through whatever they have to sit through in order to ask their questions about the game? Okay, good.
So
you've clearly seen we have at least six other Starfinder panels.
Yeah.
Smart folks.
Okay, then let's go through talking about character creation.
Do you have an opening question there?
Yeah. If you don't mind, I think one thing if you could think about is, could you help us with explaining the mechanical differences between making a character in Pathfinder versus Starfinder?
That's a great place
to
start.
Yeah, that is a great place to start.
In fact, one other show of hands here. Who here is at least relatively familiar with Pathfinder RPG? Okay. That helps us.
Great.
Actually, let's is anybody in here not already pretty comfortable making a Pathfinder character? It's totally okay. Okay, but yeah, great. Okay, one. So,
get him.
No, but that's really useful. So we can get straight to the shorthand of how things are different, rather than being what are ability scores?
And it helps to know that we can make those comparisons and that you guys will know what we're talking about.
Although, actually, a great difference to start with is what are ability scores? How are ability scores different in from Pathfinder to Starfinder?
Sure. So we have a whole new point buy system that you guys are probably familiar with if you've seen the book, and I think we've talked about it at other panels and online and in blogs a little bit as well. So you start out with 10 points for each ability score across the board. You apply your adjustments from your race, and then your theme will give you a +1 in something that's related to that theme. And then you go from there and you do point buy. And this is where the big difference comes in. We have a 1-to-1 point buy system in Starfinder. You have 10 points that you can allocate however you want to each ability score. The only restrictions are you cannot lower an ability score to get more points, and you can't make any ability score over 18. That's cumulative with all of your racial bonuses and your theme bonuses. So you just go from there. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
You have to do all those before you apply the point.
No, you do the adjustments first, and then you do the
The point by part is the last step.
Yes.
Yeah.
But something to define an important term. Theme.
Yes.
This is a part of character creation that was not part of Pathfinder RPG at all. Although the closest analog would be the trait system, which tended to give you some little cool, flavorful things and give you some inspired background ideas. In this case, though, theme, instead of giving you several different traits to choose, theme is one big package. And the combination of your class, race, and theme can help to create a wide variety of different combinations of possibilities. So you might be a mechanic, but you could also choose the priest theme, so you have some, what in Pathfinder would be almost like clerical overtones, but with a mechanic chassis, so you're like, bah, technology, whatever, or whichever deity you happen to worship.
It really represents your character's background and training and philosophies and things like that, and it is, like what John said, very similar to traits, also, like you mentioned, it scales with levels, so you're getting different things at different levels. I think it's, was it 1st, 6th, 12th, 18th, or something 12, like 18. That?
Yeah.
Okay, that sounds right. And then, so every theme for the first level ability is that you get bonuses to certain types of skills that sort of match that theme. And then the abilities differ pretty widely going from there, but... it's a good way to lock in something that represents, where your character comes from, essentially.
And to bring this back to ability scores, that means that we do have these three sources of adjusting your ability scores. So your race will give you, will give you +2 to two of them, -2 to another.
Yep.
Should be pretty familiar for Pathfinder. Your theme gives you +1 to one of your ability scores. And then you have 10 discretionary points, as Amanda had mentioned earlier. So we're going to see a grand total of, mental math set 60, 70. You're going to have a total of 73 points by the end across all of your ability scores, sounds right.
I think so, yeah, with the level up stuff, right?
Yeah, and then leveling up is, although this isn't part of character building, it's something to consider while building your character, is that in Pathfinder, every 4 levels, you gained that +1 to 1 ability score, which... for most characters was a no-brainer. My wizard gains intelligence. My fighter gains strength. Toodly-whoop.
Can
we just quote you on the toodly-whoop?
It's toodly-whoop in comparison to what I'm about to share.
Sure.
In that Starfinder does things rather differently. Every 5 levels, you're going to get an ability score adjustment. I should pluralize that. You're going to get ability score adjustments. Choose your favorite 4, or if you prefer to be a pessimist, choose your least favorite 2. choose those favorite 4. All those gain a boost. So you no longer have to worry about leaving all your other stats behind. You can choose a wide array of things to increase. But here's where things get a little bit tricky, and it's why I'm bringing it up during character creation. If your ability score was a 16 or lower when you apply that boost, gain +2. If it was 17 or higher, though, gain +1. So if you're looking in a long-term sense at your character, you might consider some 16s in there rather than going all the way to 18, because you will get less return for your investment on those ability score boosts.
And one of the reasons behind that philosophically was to try and make sort of more well-rounded characters. Rather than just glass cannons, but no offense to the podcast guys.
Yeah.
But you were actually a big proponent of that method. Do you want to talk at all about why you felt that was an important change?
I mean, that change is paired up with the idea of us avoiding dump stats in the first place. Because in creating these well-rounded characters, we want to make it so that you are gradually boosting a little bit of everything as you go. We've had... at this point, 9 years or so of test bed with Pathfinder RPG, with organized play, with adventure path feedback, and hearing, oh gosh, I can't believe it, it's so unfair that your mind spiders kept on dominating my barbarian who had a 5 wisdom. Geez, that's just bad design, Paizo. When in fact, you had a 5 wisdom the entire time, and you're blaming who now? So I think that in general, there's a better play experience when you have a better rounded character, especially when you're talking about some of the skills and abilities and opportunities that show up in a typical Starfinder game.
I also, just in case people are interested, sort of some behind the scenes stuff about the ability scores in particular. So we actually had an entirely different ability score system for the game that was significantly more complicated, and it had partial points and all this stuff that you had to keep track of, and points that didn't apply yet. So we thought, okay, that works. It fits the math well. And, we sent it through a bunch of playtesting, and everybody was like, that's cool, And, everybody around the office kind of got it. And some people were like, it's a little bit confusing. So we went back and rewrote it, and they were like, okay, now I get it. Blah, blah, blah. And then at the last minute, Amanda was like, let's show this to a few people that are not like hardcore gamers as much. Yep. I found a different pool of people, set them down with character creation, and after an hour the people were like, we hate this and we're starting to hate you. And we went like, oh god!
Yep.
So we had to like go all the way back to scratch throughout the entire ability score system we were working with and design up a new one that fortunately... Fortunately, I mean, that could have been really, really bad.
Yeah,
but,
this was 2 weeks before the book had to ship, by
yeah.
the way.
but we managed to come up with a new system that was actually much more streamlined,
yep.
much more user-friendly. And so I sort of panic wrote that, and then we sent it through yep. a bunch of, you know, obviously yep. development and playtesting. And now suddenly all the groups were like, oh, actually, this was easy. We like this. This is cool.
Yes.
And so it was a bullet narrowly dodged.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
But that was probably the most terrifying moment of the entire project.
I think so, because it really was sort of like that time clock, right? And so we had something that's like, I'm reading through it, and part of my mission in the first, especially in the first chapter, was to make sure that this book was accessible, make sure that this book made sense, and make sure that we were explaining things in a way that would make sense to folks like you who are very used to Pathfinder, because we were doing it differently. Even that original system was very, very different from what you would be
yeah.
used to for Pathfinder. And the more I read through it, the more I'm working on copy fitting, the more it's just like, oh, man, I'm not really sure that this is what we need. I'm not really sure this is the best way to do it. And, you know, once we finally hit that point of, okay, you know, we're going to throw it out. We're going to figure out something else. It was very much just like, all right, we're going to do what we need to do. However many hours it takes, we're going to get
yeah.
this right.
Yeah.
So it was a challenge.
And I should point out actually that the system we eventually went with was Stephen Redney McFarland,
yes.
One of the Paizo's designers, was the person who had the idea that was like, actually, what if you did it like
yeah.
X? We were like, that's great, we're taking it, we're fixing it,
yep.
we're writing it now.
Yeah, and it really worked just like that, where we're like talking to the designers about, you know, we really think something needs to change, I have a lot of concerns, you know. I think this was even before we got the feedback that we got. It was like, I anticipate that this feedback is going to come back
yeah,
the way
yeah.
that it did. You know, and it did. And then they were all like putting their heads together, and Steven's like, well, you know, maybe this. And we're like, all right, let's take this, and then we'll get the feedback, and then it all...
I seriously had like a 10-minute conversation with him
yep.
and a sticky note that where I was writing it down, like looking at all the developers and being like, the developers on the Starfinder, like... Star Chamber, we call the office that has a bunch of people in it. And it was just sort of like, it was like, all right, we doing this? Are you like,
okay, go.
It was basically like, swear a blood oath that this is the right thing to do. Okay, now we're going. And
yeah.
wrote that up in like 6 hours.
Yep.
Yeah.
One of the things in Pathfinder is, so if you're a wizard, you take an intelligence boost anytime you can. But that's one of the things that makes a wizard special. He's the smart guy in the party, and he excels in doing things that use intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like you're balancing characters out more, but what about making characters really shine at their specialty? Is that still...
That's still definitely there. Not only would a wizard set... Let's go with Technomancer, because Starfinder. Not only is a Technomancer going to put more initially into intelligence, and therefore will be ahead of most of the rest in the party, but... these classes that are going to favor intelligence in this case typically have different abilities that therefore feed off of intelligence more or boost the things that your intelligence was already contributing to. For example, Technomancers have a bonus on computer checks and not engineering checks. It's...
Do they not have? They probably have.
I think it's computers and mysticism
is
what they get their bonus to. So they are going to build upon what they're already good at, and that is going to help set them even farther ahead and let them specialize even more. So you could have a soldier with 60 intelligence, kudos, but there are going to be things that the Technomancer can do with that intelligence that will help her surpass the soldier.
And
right.
one of the things about this as well is also like something we were really trying to do in Starfinder is make it so that you can have a party with all sorts of different class combinations, right? If you want to run 5 soldiers, like, that's
yeah.
okay. You know,
mm-hmm.
we wanted to make it so that it wasn't like everybody is so hyper-specialized that everything is easy for this one character build and impossible for everybody else, right? Trying to reduce some of that variance so that you can have more diversity of character types within your party.
And we also wanted to, like James was saying, we also wanted to not feel like people were shoehorning themselves into certain character concepts because they were getting the bonus to their key ability scores. That is still a concept in Starfinder, and those of you who have the books will see in the classes that there is a line for key ability scores for each class. Most of them have one, a couple of them have two, but it still just very upfront tells you, you know, you're an envoy, you're very charismatic, you're a technomancer, you're smart, you have intelligence, that sort of thing. But we wanted people to be able to mix and match races and themes in ways that made sense for the character concept that they were creating, and not because, well, they were the technomancer, they have to take what's intelligence. We wanted people to be able to explore that, and we know in Pathfinder, it can feel very much like you're shoehorning yourself into your options because you're getting the boost to the certain stat, and so why would you take anything else? So that is another reason for the philosophy behind why the ability scores are a little more stabilized for the stats.
So that's some good background as to character design. Let's see some of it in practice, though. Yeah. So we already talked a little bit about ability scores. We're going to get into calculating some of those because it sounds like we want to build a character or two together. So let's talk about some of our other big components. Namely, we're going to have to choose some races. I figure what we can do with this guy is we can sort of build two different characters as a group, and we're going to do some really hokey Mad Libs with you guys making the choices here. So this could end up with some really bad decisions, but we'll use that as a teaching moment. So let's quickly go over the races. James, you want to give us a quick, just a quick little elevator pitch for each of our races, and then we'll make some calls?
We'll see if I can do this without looking at the book.
All right.
It's very early. All right. So first off, you've got humans, obviously, are still around. And actually, before I go through these races, I should also point out all of the Pathfinder races are still in Starfinder. You can find the stats for those in the back of the book in the
Chapter 12, Legacy Races.
Yeah.
So feel free to still play elves and dwarves and whatnot, but we wanted to focus a little bit more on these new races. So in addition to humans...
Aliens.
Yeah, exactly. In science fiction. We've got androids, which, I mean, I guess I'll talk about thematically, and then if you guys want to talk about mechanics or whatever. So thematically, androids are obviously created people. Who here played Iron Gods? Really? I'm surprised there's not more. Okay, awesome. Well, androids are very similar to Pathfinder androids. They've evolved and changed a little bit to, in some ways, be a little more sort of artificial feeling, a little more Blade Runner-esque meets Terminator. So you've got androids, you've got the Kasatha, which are the four-armed aliens, also originally introduced into Pathfinder, but are now much more prominent within the system. They come from a desert world. They're very interested in tradition. They're very they're interesting in that they have lots of customs. Like they always cover their mouths all the time. And so they're sort of like a designed to be sort of the exotic sort of traditionalist culture. We've got the Isoki, which are rat people. Out of curiosity, show of hands, who here is interested in playing rat people? See, thank you. Because when we were first figuring out the races for this, I was telling Eric Mona, the publisher, well, we've got to have, you know, Yosoki, which I had mentioned in Distant Worlds. Like, they're the rat folk. Like, we need that. And he was like, why do we need rat folk? That's not science fiction. I was like, do you not understand the appeal of Rocket Raccoon? Like, what is... Like, maybe you don't want this, but there will be at least one person in every group who is so excited to be like a little Jawa, like... You know, like... That is necessary.
And it turns out most infamous playtest character was a Yosoki
pedal. Yeah, it was her pedal.
Yep.
So the Yosoki, super fun. Let's see, we've got the Lashunta, who also were from Pathfinder. They've updated and changed a little bit, so the interesting thing about them is they're sort of psychic, kind of scholar-type people. They're very, as a culture, they're very interested in sort of education, in sort of self-improvement. They've got a few shades of Vulcan to them, but they also are, they have two different sub-races. So one of them is very tall, thin, charismatic. They tend to be sort of like the leaders, the politicians of the group. And then some of them are more short and broad and muscular and tend to be the more sort of fiery warrior version. So they've got kind of two sub-races with different statistics. So it's kind of two races for the price of one.
Right, and Crystal Frazier was really instrumental in getting that sort of updated from some of the older descriptions of them.
Yeah, in Pathfinder it had been more about sexual dimorphism, and here it's really about two sub-races where you can play whichever you want. Let's see, what haven't I hit yet?
The new ones.
The new ones, right.
Yeah.
So we've got the Vesk, which are these big reptilian race. They're kind of, well, I don't want to say they're our Klingons. They're kind of our Klingons. In that, like, every game needs a big sort of honorable warrior race. And so they're really interesting. They actually come from outside the Pact Worlds, which is the core setting of Starfinder. And for a long time, the other civilized races of the Pact Worlds were at war with these folks until an outside enemy forced them to sort of combine. So there's a lot of that kind of, like, imagine just after the Cold War, like, ended with, like, sort of Russian-American relations. Like, that's kind of the attitude Vesk and the other races kind of have toward each other. And the last ones, probably my favorite, are the Sheeran, a.k.a. Bug People. and so these guys are an insectile race. They're interesting in that they actually broke away from one of the big threats within the system, which is called the Swarm. And that's sort of our Zerg, Tyranid, you know, that sort of like, you know, Borg in a way, like overwhelming hive mind race that just exists to devour everything, like space locusts, you know, Independence Day, that kind of thing. But due to possibly divinely inspired genetic mutation, one hive broke off from that and evolved into a culture that had individual free will. Yes. that had free will, and so that race became the Sheeran. And so they're still very, like many insects, they're very sort of communal, they're very interested in the good of society, but they're also hyper-individualistic in the sense of when they were controlled by the swarm, the hive mind could sort of stimulate the pleasure centers in their brain, or the pain centers, and sort of make them do what they were supposed to do. So the Sheeran actually still, as a sort of relic of that, they have a real addiction, like physiological addiction, to independent choice. So like every time they make a choice, they get a little like burst of happy juice in their brain. And so you end up with these bugs who are like super interested in like, if they go
to
our...
the pink socks. No, the green socks.
Exactly. If they go to
I'm going to wear both socks.
If they go to a restaurant, just reading that menu like sets them off. So there are like literally option junkies of like Sheeran who are just like, it's like a crack epidemic, but instead they're just sitting there being like, red socks, blue socks. So I find that a really fun trait to play with.
So mechanically, it probably doesn't make much sense just to go through all the ability score stuff, but surprise, some of the things that James mentioned being big and strong. Ones that he mentioned being pretty smart, pretty smart. We'll go through those as we sort of choose which ones we're going to have. So we're going to be making two of these characters. So shall we just run through our list of things and see?
Go through it, and then raise your hand if at any point you're like, hey, I don't understand that, or why did you do that?
Going through classes?
Well, no, I was thinking of, let's just do a quick poll of what races we're going to use for our characters.
Right. Sure, go for it.
And you can vote for as many of these as you want. All right, we're going to go with these core seven right now.
Wait for
all right, so, androids.
What?
Who's interested in the android character?
Androids?
Okay,
all right.
Cool, eight-ish. Human. And one of our colleagues, Diego, will invariably vote for human. He always plays that. Lashunta.
Cool.
Okay.
All right. Kasatha. Those are our four-armed desert people.
Okay.
I think we're going to end up with a lot of you, so...
Yeah, I think we are.
All righty. Sheeran, our bug people.
Bug people.
All right.
Good showing for the bugs.
Vesk, the reptilian.
Good showing for
desert
Vesk.
People.
And Soki. All right.
Actually, I think Sheeran won that one.
So I think it's a Sheeran and we're making a Yosoki.
Can we do a half Sheeran, half Yosoki?
That is not an option. That is not yet an option.
James, as creative director, are you against fun?
I just don't want to get into the questions of like, so how do the Yosoki and the bugs? Like, no, I'm...
That's another panel.
Leave it to the message board.
Starfinder After Dark.
Yeah, all right. So, so something to keep in mind is with Shirin, those guys are plus 2 constitution, plus 2 wisdom, and minus 2 charisma.
Which is not their fault, that just because everybody else is like, ooh, icky bug people, they're so nice.
You call them icky bug people.
Yeah,
but that's...
I think that's the start of the movie downhill. Okay, Yosoki are plus 2 dexterity, they are plus 2 intelligence, and they're minus 2 strength. Whose fault is that, James?
What? Dude, I like Yosoki. That's like the thing that's interesting about Yosoki is I can already tell like they're going to be a very divisive race in some ways, cuz like they have abilities like one of the Yosoki's racial abilities are these
Why don't you cheek pouches. Yeah. So we picked up the cheek pouches alternate racial trait from Pathfinder, and the way it works in Starfinder is that you can store anything up to one bulk that is I think up to 1 cubic feet in size in your cheek pouches as a Yosoki. And, you know, let me say, yeah, this is me officially saying that grenade is awesome, even though it might not be the mechanically best option. It's still pretty cool to reach in your cheek pouch and offer a grenade to a buddy and watch him get grossed out. I'm just saying.
And this is the thing, like, for every person that hates it, there's somebody whose eyes just get all starry at the mention of cheek
pouches. Yeah, right? It's awesome.
I'm imagining them go through a checkpoint where they have to leave weapons.
Exactly.
So they
have to
puke on the floor.
Wait, 1 second.
That scene where he's reaching in, taking more stuff out, and then you cut back, and he's like, you know, got a knife, spare astro spanner, like, you know.
And he's just looking at the guard like, what, you wouldn't do this if you were me? Come on, be honest.
And then one of the special abilities of Shirin is that they have limited telepathy, so they're one of our few races who can just telepathically ping anybody within 30 feet that they can see. Think of all the fun, practical applications for annoying your friends.
Which is very useful because other races tend to find their actual speaking very chittery and disconcerting. Exactly. They got a lot of mouth parts going on there.
I think almost every Starfinder game I've run, including demos, has had at least one person playing a Sharon or a Lashunta going like this when they're doing their telepathy. Because that's apparently the universal sign for talking with your mind.
Is now. did you have a question?
Yeah, does telepathy require two-party consent?
It's more like
talking. Yeah. Like, you can yell at somebody. Now, they're not reading your mind. It's not detect thoughts.
Right.
It's just, like, essentially speaking.
You're projecting your voice into their mind, and it's the same way as if you had, like, 4 or 5 different people talking around you. If you have 4 or 5 people trying to, you know, telepathically communicate, it's going to be hard to parse all that.
Yeah,
and I imagine in a setting where telepathy is relatively common, people have adapted their own little techniques to ignore it. Sort of like we can ignore somebody who's talking around us.
But it is useful, especially in, like, say you're in vacuum, right? Like, sound isn't going to carry, but you can still talk with your brain.
Yeah.
So,
still talk with your brain.
Talk with your brain.
All right, shall we do a rundown of the classes?
Sure, yeah. Okay.
Or, theme first?
Theme.
Okay. Yeah, we should do theme
first. That's a very good point. All right. We're going to...
So there's quite a few of them. Do you want to just, like,
including
list them?
Themeless.
There you go.
All right. So, we have many more themes than we do races and classes.
You probably just give them the name and the ability score that they bump, pretty much.
Yeah, right.
We don't even need the ability score.
Yeah,
let's just go with the name and quick...
Yeah, what's that?
So, it seems like you got kind of two things you do as a character. You basically do your normal role-playing, you know, going through the outpost or the planet or whatever. But then you got the starship combat.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
So, it's like... It seems like the starship... combat roles are much more narrow than, of course, all the full realm of possibility with role playing. So, how important is it to create a guy that has a role in a fight?
For starship combat?
Yep.
It is and it isn't. I know that's not the best answer in the world, but I think that's the best, I think that's fairly descriptive. So if you really don't need to consider it that much when you're making your character. The only thing you need to pay attention to is your skill points and making sure that if you have a specific role that you want to do, like if you want to be the captain of the ship or something, that you have enough ranks in that particular skill that's applicable to that role to make it at least worthwhile for your character.
In planning organized play, Thurston Hillman and I were looking a lot at how Starship Combat was going to factor into that sort of system. And
basically for organized play characters, I recommend planning around 1 to 1.5 different roles that you could fill on a starship, but not less than one, ideally.
Right, you should have at least one if you know that that's going to be a part of the game. If you have a GM who just doesn't want to do that, then obviously you don't need to pay attention to it.
And some character classes have a whole bunch of skill points, and so they can diversify a whole bunch. Like,
and a lot of class skills as well.
Yeah, like Isef and Navasi are iconic operative and envoy. Both have a wide variety of skills that make them really good at almost anything on a starship.
Yeah.
Whereas several others are more limited in that regard.
And Isef also has an ace pilot theme too, so it becomes fairly...
spoiler.
Yeah.
But in general, like, it's not something where if you don't specifically orient toward a role, you're not going to have something to do. Like, there's enough variation in what's sort of required and what the classes automatically give you that, like, if you just make a character... probably you're going to be able to find a role that is pretty good on the spaceship. Now, that said, it may be that if all of you play soldiers or whatever, you're probably going to have quite a few people who want to be the gunner on the spaceship, and maybe nobody who wants to be the science officer. That can happen, but so basically, short version, if there's something you really want to do, if you're like, I want to be the pilot, you can totally build toward that, but if you're not sure... you'll find something.
And you can change roles in mid-combat as well. And if it turns out somebody's rolling really terrible, or nobody paid attention to being the pilot of the thing, or nobody's a science officer, and that
and
would be really useful.
You told me you'd be a science officer. Oh, the lights on the computer, they're flashing. I don't know what to do.
Pretty much.
Elbow aside.
Get out of here.
And you can have multiple people. For many of the roles, you can have multiple people. So if you're like, I want to be the gunner. No, I want to be the gunner. Both just be the gunner. That's
it's
cool.
Designed to be as flexible as possible so that you're not in a situation where you have nobody who can do any of the things, and then the whole thing is warped because nobody has the right skill point for it.
Another question back.
It sort of pertains to the leadership, like with the ship and everything. There's a lot of feats that you guys left out from Pathfinder when you made Starfinder, like the leadership feat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Could we use feats from Pathfinder that would make sense or pertain to Starfinder, or is it just like the feats of Starfinder, that's it?
At your own risk. As with most stuff from Pathfinder, like we specifically designed the game to be backward compatible in certain ways. Like, for instance, being able to pick up a monster from any Pathfinder bestiary and throw it right into the game with, you know, minimal, 30 seconds of conversion of the table. That is something we were able to plan around and really balanced with. With as soon as you get into stuff like feats or spells or, let alone, God forbid, classes and whatnot, you probably you can port that in. But we didn't design Starfinder around making sure that every one of the bajillion feats we published for Pathfinder are going to work fine in Starfinder. So it's one of those, it might work just fine. Don't hold us responsible if your characters kill literally everything.
And
is there parameters we should watch out for? Or that like the leadership feat? Is there any, like... along with the other feats, we should like
stuff that was specifically cut for a reason or
Look at the feat chapter, especially any feats whose names you recognize from Pathfinder RPG.
They're probably different.
Because if they're different, it's really important to notice how they're different and keep that in mind for the underlying design philosophy. For example, Deadly Aim works in a different way because the mathematics of making attack rolls is slightly different in Starfinder.
Okay.
So you can't just say, oh, this thing gave a +4 to hit in Pathfinder, it must give a +4 to hit in Starfinder. No.
Yeah, it's the same way with like the toughness feat is a good example, because hit points and damage is entirely different in Starfinder.
That, right?
And so the feat's very different. It works very different in Starfinder, and there's a reason for that.
So one thing to keep in mind then, like an underlying philosophical difference, is actually bonuses in general are much less common in Starfinder than in Pathfinder.
And some bonus types are just gone from the game in Starfinder.
So if you take a whole bunch of different, I get a +1 from this, a +1 from this, and over here. If you're taking that from outside of Starfinder, you may end up with a character that is significantly overpowered just because the bonus structure is different.
So the combat feats are probably going to be the feats that transition probably the poorest over Starfinder from Pathfinder.
I wouldn't even use a superlative. There are so many little things to consider if you're going to port things in, and the legacy chapter in the Starfinder RPG book is going to help you with that.
Yeah.
But in general, we would say official answer is, don't do it.
Yeah, in general, if it's not in that feat chapter, there's probably a pretty good reason why it's not in there.
And we'll be bringing more. I mean, there's a pretty good reason. Sometimes that reason is page count. So, there will absolutely be more feats coming over that you do recognize. There will be a lot more that you don't recognize that are designed specifically for Starfinder.
Yeah, totally.
But these are the ones guaranteed safe.
We should, however, make sure that we are building our character.
Yeah, we should. Okay, we'll move.
Yeah, we'll make
just
the choices, and then if you don't mind holding your questions, we'll That's answer those point. At the end of at the end of the panel. So for the themes, we'll just list them here. We've got Ace Pilot, which is pretty obvious in what it does. It's a Han Solo type of character. Who's very good at driving
vehicles.
You're
going to repeat that a lot.
Well, that's true. Bounty Hunter is another one. I'm sure you can all guess what that one's modeled after. The next one is Icon. That's like your interplanetary celebrity, somebody who's very well known about a very specific thing, and it's pretty broad what that can be from a flavor standpoint. We've got a Mercenary, who exactly what it looks like on the tin. Very good at killing stuff and getting paid for it. We've got an outlaw, which is, of course, somebody who's, on the wrong side of the law somewhere, but it is not necessarily somebody who's actually broken a law. They might just be wanted for something. There might be some sort of disagreement, or might actually be a criminal.
I'm a rebel! Somebody who's good with the underworld and operating outside of polite society.
And our iconic envoy has a pretty interesting take on what the outlaw is for her. We've got the priest. That's like John was mentioning earlier in the panel, somebody who is fairly religious and gets bonus to wisdom and all of that. We've got a scholar who is good at learning information and has areas of expertise that are reflected in those themes' abilities. We've got a spacefarer who travels around and is interested in exploring. And the flip side of that is the Xenoseeker, who is more interested in first contact with cultures and diplomacy and things like that. And then we have Themeless, which is meant to be a catch-all theme for anybody who doesn't fit within any of those categories. You can sort of build, the character's background from there. It is a little mechanically worse than some of the others, but it's more interesting in allowing you to build what you want to do.
I really want to point out that, we created these names to make it clear, sort of a quick and easy way to define each one of these themes. But the intention is that you can use each of these themes to do a wide variety of characters, right? So the bounty hunter character might also work really well for a cop or a private eye or, all sorts of different characters. It doesn't necessarily have to be just the thing on the theme. The mercenary theme also works great for if you're a career military person, if you're a celebrity gladiator or whatever. We don't want you to feel like your hands are tied. In many ways, this is just a way to give you another dial to turn on your character that allows you to combine it with classes to make sure that, your soldier with the mercenary theme is going to feel very different than the soldier with the icon theme, talking about a celebrity gladiator, or the soldier with the priest theme is going to feel very different. So consider that. Don't feel, too hamstrung by the little brief description of what's on the label. Look at the abilities, see, do these abilities model the sort of character you want to make?
All right, so let's see about running through our nascent characters. We have our Shirin. So just quick shows of hands as I run down the list. Do we want him to be an ace pilot? Bounty hunter? Icon? Ooh, double
bug. Famous bug.
Famous bug. Mercenary. Outlaw.
Okay.
Priest, some popularity there. Right. Scholar,
cool.
Spacefarer, travel bug.
Travel bug.
Okay.
Xenoseeker, first contact bug.
Oh, bug.
I'm liking Xenoseeker.
Yeah,
okay.
That's pretty great.
All right. So, and then for our Isoki,
for speed, should we just pick somebody and let them decide?
Yes.
Who wants to pick what the Isoki's theme is?
Wait.
Icon.
Yeah.
Done. Yeah.
Sounds like general approval of rat celebrity.
Yeah, rat celebrity.
All right, so our Xenoseeker, I believe, is a charisma bonus, which is going to be pretty cool for our Shirin. So there's one charisma, and our icon is also charisma. We have a good party.
Yeah, we do.
What more do you need than charisma? Cool. So they're going to get some little starting abilities, like the Xenoseeker is going to be better at identifying and communicating with unknown alien species. Our icon share is going to be more recognizable, which is usually good.
So, John, I just realized we've only got 10 minutes left.
Sure do.
We should probably answer questions, right?
Let me do a quick blitz build of some of these guys just to show some
3-minute blitz build.
Cool.
Go!
So, quick rundown of our classes. Envoy, you're a talker, you're a leader, you inspire.
Space bard.
Mechanic, you have two choices. You either have a drone that follows you around and you can control, or you have an exocortex that allows you to basically have an AI plugged into your head that you can manipulate and use to your combat prowess. The mystic, this is one form of our spell casting. This is a person who draws upon a certain esoteric or mystical source for their spell casting. Operative, this is your skill person, your sneak in and do things style individual. Solarian, this is somebody who balances the power of light and plasma and photons and gravity and immobility and black holes to create sort of a back and forth seesaw of esoteric and mystical powers. The soldier, blam blam. Technomancer is our other spellcasting class. In this case, you're drawing upon your technological prowess as well as the inherent power within technological devices. So, since we keep on throwing all this fun stuff at our Isoki, what class am I making my Isoki?
Tech priest.
Tech priest? You mean like a...
Technomancer? Yeah. All right.
Cool. Oh, that's right. And for our Xenoseeker Shirin is going to be a...
I don't know.
Too slow!
Someone else. Soldier.
Soldier.
All right.
Cool.
Yeah.
So, awesome. In the character creation process, from there, I'm going to do something that's very different from Pathfinder. I am going to be calculating my hit points in an entirely different way. No longer is it simply based on my class, although that does play a role in it. It's also going to be based on my race. So, I'm going to look at my Shirin, and I'm going to say, okay, this gives me 6 hit points. Right. 6 HP. I'm also going to look at Soldier, which also says 6 HP. Hop diggity doo. We are winning at the soldier game. And then same sort of thing with Isoki. They're smaller. They only get 2 hit points for being a Isoki. And Technomancer, I believe, is 5. Oh, sorry, I should be getting 7 for soldier, because that's 5 for Technomancer. And then you're also going to gain some stamina points on top of that. So your stamina is like your buffer of your hit points. Once that disappears, then you start taking the real damage. And then you can, of course, die.
Yeah. That's a whole other thing. We've got other panels if you guys want to hear some of the mechanics that are different.
Is there anything else you want to mention before for questions?
Quick other considerations. You're going to have a key ability score for each of these classes. In the case of Soldier, Strength. In the case of Technomancer, Intelligence. These determine your resolve points. Your resolve points are your do awesome stuff points. They're also your, oh dang, I'm on the ground points. So you're going to gain a number equal to half your level, minimum 1, plus your key ability bonus. So whatever we end up putting into those for our soldier and our technomancer are going to determine our resolve, which will become more and more relevant the more in danger we are or the more class abilities we gain.
All right. Chance for any questions before we have to get out of here? Let's start right there.
Is this ever going to appear anytime soon on Hero Life?
It's certainly something we're working on.
They're working
I don't think we have a firm release date yet, but we're working closely with them. Yeah. Right there.
Can you multi-class?
You can multi-class. It's a little bit different, and there are some instructions in the core rulebook that explain most of those.
Yeah.
In the sake of interest of time.
Yeah.
Who else have we got?
There was another question in the back. Or did everybody just want to know about multi-classing? John, do you want to talk about the differences between multi-classing?
Amanda, you're probably a better resource on this one.
Oh, so for multi-classing, it's easier, and but it is not necessarily ideal. It's sort of like what we did with Pathfinder, where we have archetypes and stuff instead of the old version of picking all these different classes to make a prestige class and all of that. You're really encouraged to just, you know, go into one class. However, there's no such things like, you know, fractional BAB and saves and things like that. And the instructions in the book sort of teach you how to stack all that stuff fairly organically. So if you want to go that route, it's a little bit easier, not necessarily, you know, always ideal, depending on which classes. And there's some advice in there that talk about, you know, which classes mix and match a little better than others. Back there.
I feel like a lot of the classes, it seems kind of obvious what their trajectory is for the future, for when they're high level. What does a high-level Solarian look like?
Ooh.
A high-level Solarian is going to get not only abilities that help them to align and attune themselves more quickly, because basically you're always starting in the middle when you start a combat, and you start building toward one of the two endpoints. And once you reach fully attuned in either end, you have the capacity to just burn all of your attunement in some sort of really big power.
Explosion.
Yeah. So in the case of high-end photon, you can just explode in fire.
Yeah. And you have styles, right? So you've got the photon and you've got the graviton, and it's a little bit like combat styles in which you have to sort of stay in that for rounds, consecutive rounds, and then once you hit a certain number, you can do the big thing.
Yeah, imagine if, you know, Obi-Wan and Darth Vader could go Super Saiyan in the middle of that fight. Like, that's kind of what you're looking at.
And so you're going to end up with the ability to burn hotter or turn into living plasma and fly through the air, through people.
Or become a black hole.
Become a black hole temporarily. Those sorts of things. I mean, it's good for society.
They're people
goals.
People,
become
right?
Become a black hole. Yeah. Where do you see yourself in 5 years? The opposite of all matter.
They're ambitious folks. Yeah. In the back.
So when you level up, do you get hit points and stamina based off your class, your raid?
Your race only works on the first level.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
And then each time you get hit points with the constitution modifier for each level.
And stamina. Your hit points and stamina are going to go up.
Yep.
But your constitution is only getting added.
But as you level up, it's all based on your class. Your race is just where you start out.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's a set number, not a dice roll?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, we evened that out just because... You know, that was actually a big debate right in the beginning, but while rolling dice can be really fun, everybody hates rolling hit points and be like, I'm leveling up! I get one hit point!
Yeah.
Screw this game! You know, and so we wanted to try and even that out a little bit. That's also why we should point out that we talked about the point buy system. There is absolutely still a rolling system. If you want to roll ability scores for your character, if you want to randomly generate, you can still do that, and that's right there in the book. It's just not presented as the first system. Yep. We kind of swapped the order.
It's just an alternate system. There are also quick picks in there as well if you just want to match an array basically with a type of character that you want to be, and that is good for beginners. So if you're introducing somebody who's not really used to role-playing games, that's a pretty good thing as well. Another thing that's good to point out that we haven't mentioned is that we have builds in the back of each of the class chapters that essentially lay out what feats are good, what themes are good, what different class choices are good for playing a specific type of character. So the soldier class is very broad, right? And so you might want to specialize in melee, you might want to specialize in long-range weapons, you might want to specialize in being stealthy. So there are, I believe, 4 builds in the back of each class that are much quicker and a lot easier to go ahead and get started, especially if you want to jump into like Starfinder Society.
And they've all got art as well, which is a nice way to, like, especially if you've got new players, just be like, or even veteran players, like, flip to the back of there and be like, that looks cool, I guess I want to play a hacker operative instead of an assassin operative, that kind of thing.
Yeah, we really wanted to make it faster. If you want to make it faster, we wanted to give you those tools and options.
All right, last question. Right there.
Kind of off base on this, but are they going to do miniatures and more pawns for the Starfinder?
There will absolutely be a ton more pawns. The Starfinder Core Rulebook pawn set is actually a really good place to start because a lot of those builds and whatnot have pawns right in there.
Mm-hmm.
But there will be more pawns. There will also be more miniatures coming down the line. We've got a partnership with Ninja Division to make pre-painted plastics.
Unfortunately, a lot of them were not able to be here for the show. You can get the resin ones at their booth, but the actual pre-painted ones are still coming in fall.
Yeah.
And we're starting with just sort of some iconic sets, a few ships, few iconics, and then hopefully from there it will turn into a much larger line.
If you haven't already been down to the booth, we've got one of those glass cases set up with all of the minis, I think, that are either available, and some of them are painted, although you can't actually buy the painted ones. But you can check it out and see how they came out. They look really cool.
Yeah.
They're very detailed. They're good builds.
103
Paizo's booth.
Our booth, you can see that. I'm not sure what Ninja Division's booth
Ninja
is.
Ninja Division's is across the hall. It's in the book.
Yeah, I looked it up and it was like...
Yeah, it's way over there.
I think it was like 28 something.
Yeah, I mean, it's like literally the opposite end.
Yeah,
correct.
All right, and that's all the time we've got, so we got to cut it off for now. But thank you, everybody.
Thank you guys for coming, checking out. Appreciate it.
Good job, team.
All right.
Yeah, they'll be like...